Doctors, May 25th, 2005, on Nikonians Podcasts. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Thanks again for joining us this week. We've got another sordid tale of photography for you today.
Yep.
Today we're brought to you by Alien Skin Software, makers of such things like Exposure Plugin, amongst other things for Photoshop. You can see their website at www.alienskin.com. Check them out.
Yep.
So what are we going to talk about today, Rick?
Well, we're going to talk about a couple things. First, we're going to talk a little bit about getting ready for a trip. And actually, I'm not here.
That's right.
<'cause... laughs> I'm not in the mountain lair today on the 25th. Hopefully, unless something went awry, I'm somewhere in the Australian outback at this point.
Don't tell anyone, but this may be pre-recorded.
It could be pre-recorded. In all likelihood, it is.
So, Rick, I hope you're having fun in Australia, you bastard.
Any rate, so we're going to talk about
thought
process.
Since you're packing for your trip.
Yeah, which I am. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that you should think through, things that I did for this trip. Hopefully, they worked. I'll know, I guess, a little bit later.
And when then you the come second, back next time, we'll tell
we'll
you
talk
all
a little
about
bit about
the trip.
Yeah. The other thing that we're going to discuss is actually a review of Capture One RAW converter software.
Right, and that's by Phase One.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice little workflow
yeah,
RAW conversion.
It's a good converter, and we'll talk more about that in a sec. First, trips.
Going on a trip.
Always a cool thing. I always get excited. One of the things I did a little bit differently with this trip, I'd been vowing to do this for years and never did it, was make a list of the things that I wanted to take, the photographic stuff in advance, so that you know I wouldn't be hurriedly packing at the last minute trying to figure out where the heck I put something and then forgetting something into the last minute and then running back into the house and grabbing it.
Yeah, bringing your tripod and leaving your ball headed home would not
be
a smart
thing. Yeah, it's a bad
thing.
And so I vowed to do something better, and I did. So this time I made up a little checklist. And the process, I had to think through, you know, the subjects I'm going to be photographing, at least ones I think I'll be photographing.
Right.
Based on what I've
So right now you're in Australia. What kind of subjects are you shooting as we speak?
Well, hopefully some landscape stuff. Yeah, and the landscapes will be in different places, some along the coast, some, you know, like I mentioned earlier, in the middle of the outback, so wide range of things. There should be some photography of animals. I'll be spending a little bit of time on Kangaroo Island, and from what I've heard, there are koalas there, there are penguins, sea life, you know, things like seals and stuff like that.
Yep.
So good variety of things.
You're making me jealous.
Yeah, I hope so. little bit of urban stuff around Sydney and other places. You know, just a good general
variety.
It's
one of those
variety.
Trips where it'd be easy to overpack because there's so many different kinds of photography you could do.
Now, it's a family trip. I'm going with my wife and son, so I also have to be reasonable on this. I'm not going to take the 200 to 400 that we reviewed in the last episode.
As much as you would like to have it.
Yeah, I'd like to, but it'll be a lot to carry it around. It'll be a lot to get set up quickly, and so I'm just going to try to temper myself and go with some shorter focal length. So I did do a little bit of research. I asked some questions on the Nikonians website, people that have been to some of these locations, and I think I can go with a little bit less. So
now you're going digital on this trip, right?
Yeah,
I know you have an F6 and sometimes, mm-hmm. I mean, so your first decision is, do I want to go film or do I want to go digital? And for some of us, of course, that's a no-brainer because you only have one or the other.
Right.
But sometimes you have to think about
it. For these kind of subjects, for landscape stuff, for wildlife stuff, I like using digital probably the best. For family photos and stuff, I often like film, but with the mix on this trip, I think digital will be a little bit better. And so what I've got on my checklist right now, D2X, and then D200 is a backup. Fortunately, I've never, ever needed a backup camera so far, but you never know. You hate to go on a big trip and not be able to take photos. Bunch of flashcards.
Yeah. How much memory are you bringing?
Well, I've got 2 4-gig cards, a couple 2-gig cards, I think 1 1-gig card, and I think I've got some old 512 things, so I'm just going to take them all.
Right. Now, do you plan then to, like, offload these photographs every day into your laptop or something?
Pretty much every day. I'm going to leave the laptop at home,
actually.
I'm going to be bold. It's a little bit of a risk, but I'm going to leave the laptop home just because I don't want to lug it through airports and all around.
So where are you putting your pictures?
I'm going to throw them on a FlashTracks portable hard drive.
Okay.
And that thing has worked well. It's always been reliable.
And you've got the 40 gigabyte model of that one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think that'll be okay. I don't shoot a huge number of images in comparison with some people, so right. I think I'll be okay.
I mean, when you're on a trip like this, I mean, I guess this is a good point. I mean, think about how many pictures do I take in a day?
Mm-hmm.
How often will I be able to offload those pictures into some other device, not just to clear off your cards, but to back up your images.
Right.
And, you know, are you going to be in places where you don't have access to power to recharge a laptop or whatever
right.
you're going to be doing? So that will sort of dictate the number of memory cards that you need to right. have at any given time.
Exactly. And I did get an extra 4 gig card before this trip, just for that reason. But I think I'll be okay. Some days I'm going to do a lot of shooting. Some days not so much. I think it should average out okay based on past experience. I'll be gone all total about 2.5 weeks, but you know, some of those days really won't
right.
be shooting days. Flash, you know, take my SB800
uh-huh.
with its handy dandy diffuser. I'm going to take a better beamer. That's the thing that we've talked about in the past.
Right. And they're flat. They're easy to pack.
Yeah, they're it's just tiny, but it helps with those more distant shots, especially of wildlife. I'm going to take an SC17 flash cord. That just moves the flash off camera.
For those times.
A little bit different lighting. Remote cord. You know, a remote release.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to take 4 lenses. Believe it or not, this is my lightweight setup. I hate to say that, but this really is. I'm going to take a 12-24 zoom, one of my favorite lenses,
yeah.
especially for landscape stuff.
It would be kind of hard to leave that one behind on this kind of a trip.
I'm going to take the 17-55 2.8, good general purpose lens, works for a lot of stuff. The 70-200 2.8, very, very good lens, and on a digital body, works pretty well for wildlife that isn't too far away
mm-hmm.
or that isn't too skittish. And then I'll throw in a couple teleconverters, the TC14E
right.
and 20E. What I'll probably also take is the 10.5mm fisheye lens, just for fun. It's very small, very lightweight. I don't think I'll do a lot of shots with it, but it might be kind of fun.
So for those of you listening at home, you want to make a short list of lenses?
Don't listen to me.
The short list of lenses will be, let's make a list of the lenses that Rick doesn't have, because that would be a nice short list. Because when he goes to, you know, for me, when I go on a trip, I just bring my lenses because that's all I have. He has to actually pick these things out and decide for himself, do I go with the 28-70 or the 17-55?
This is
I don't have this challenge.
I'm pathetic. What can I say?
So,
it's the reality. That's why I need the list.
Yeah.
I'll take some grad filters, although, you know, you could use digital blending. I still kind of like using the grad filters. Saves post-processing time, and they work pretty well for
It'll
a lot of
subjects.
Also save
your memory card, too.
Yep, that's
Fewer
true.
Fewer exposures to take.
And I'll take a one-stop hard, a two-stop hard, a three-stop hard, and a two-stop soft. They don't take up a lot of space, and that's a pretty nice assortment. I'll take a polarizer, just a regular one, not a warming one. If I was shooting film, I'd take a warming polarizer too and probably an 81A
mm-hmm.
warming filter, but with the digital bodies, I don't need anything that warms.
And I'm looking at your lens list here. I mean, the 10.5 fisheye doesn't take front filters.
No.
The 12-24, 17-55, 70-200, they all have a 77mm front filter thread, so
yep.
that's only one filter.
Exactly. Very nice. I'm going to take a three-stop neutral density filter, just in case I want to shoot some ocean stuff and slow down the
mm-hmm.
Shutter speed. You can do some nice effects there. I'm going to take a Gitzo 1227 tripod. That's a carbon fiber tripod that's not too big. I can fit it in a suitcase, and it's fairly light. And then just a small ball head. It's a Kirk BH3. A little bit more compact thing. Doesn't have, you know, that high of load capacity, but it'll be enough for the stuff that I'm using in this trip. Chargers for the camera, batteries, and then an extra battery for both camera bodies.
Right. And that's kind of a, you know, one drawback of having the D200 as your backup. The camera
mm-hmm.
is smaller, but then you have to pack a separate charger for it.
Yeah.
But
fortunately, it's a little charger.
Yeah, those batteries are pretty
and
small.
And it uses
too.
The same cord between the charger and the
mm-hmm.
electrical outlet, so I only really have to take one cord. And I already mentioned the flash tracks. I'm going to take that and its charger. And then the last thing is the little Weibull thing that I think we mentioned a few
back
months
in
ago.
December, yeah,
yeah. It's handy if you have some weird lighting situations. It really helps you get the right kind of color or white balance later on processing raw stuff. So that's it. I'm going to throw it into a Low Pro Mini Trekker, which is a backpack style thing. It's not a big backpack. This might sound like a lot of stuff, but most of it isn't too big, and not all of it will go in the backpack. You know, like the tripod certainly.
Yeah,
won't.
And if you're not taking a huge telephoto lens, a lot of these backpacks hold a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's only when you start putting a huge 500 millimeter lens in there that all of a sudden you don't have enough backpack.
Yeah. For stuff like this trip where I'm going to do some hiking around and get out there, the backpacks are really nice, really convenient. If I was exclusively shooting in a city, I wouldn't probably take a backpack. I'd take probably a satchel kind of bag, and the lenses I was using on that trip would be smaller and lighter, mm-hmm. so not as big a deal. But backpacks are nice for this. Hopefully this checklist will help me out on the trip and keep me from forgetting something. I keep looking at it and thinking, am I forgetting something? But
as we speak right now, you're saying, Jason, where's my list? I've forgotten something. And
yeah. At any rate, hopefully the discussion of ideas and, you know, what to take helps, and concept of a checklist and all that kind of good stuff. And hopefully I am in the Outback.
And hopefully your family is letting you take pictures of them.
Yeah, they're good about that.
Yeah, excellent.
All right, part two.
Yeah, let's spend the rest of our time with you today. We want to talk about a raw converter / workflow product from Phase One. It's www.phaseone.com, and their product is called Capture One. Now, Phase One, their claim to fame is they make some pretty high-end digital backs for medium format cameras.
Heard awfully good things about them.
Yeah, they're supposed to be, you know, top end. These are like 20 megapixel, 20 kilodollar units. So this software is sort of designed for the photographer who would potentially be using their product. But they have added functionality to it that it can be used to convert raw images from a variety of cameras, not just the Phase One backs. So they're not limiting this converter to just their proprietary.
No, and I think it supports all the Nikon digital bodies.
I think
all
so
that
too.
I can think of.
So we are going to review this from the mindset of a Nikon shooter, what it does handling NEFs. Like we said, we always talk about that. But in general, I mean, the kind of person, the kind of photographer who would do well with a product like this is one. This product was designed with workflow in mind in a studio setting, especially with tethered shooting, where you are connecting the camera to the computer directly and shooting in that way and capturing images directly to a computer, and then organizing them and doing a bunch of stuff with that. But that being said, you can still use this as a pretty darn good RAW converter.
Yeah, and I like it really well, actually.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's very good, too.
Amongst the ones I've used, it's one of my favorites.
Now, there's two versions of this software. There's the LE version, or the light version, limited edition version, and it's $900 US. $99. Is that a nine? Is that a zero? No, it's $99 US.
That's better.
Yeah, there's not too many $900 RAW converters out there. However, then there's the pro version of Capture One. And that's $500 US, or I think $499 or something like that.
And the difference mainly is in tethered shooting and some things like that.
That's right. I mean, the light version is pretty well featured.
Yeah. Now, we use the pro version, but really the differences are just in that tethered category.
Right. And frankly, we really weren't using the parts of it that were and there's just a few different things. If you go to their website, you can download a PDF that tells you the differences of the versions and what you get.
But yeah, and as with all the other RAW converters, you can download trial versions and see what you think.
Yeah, and that's important.
Mm-hmm. But like I said, I like it. I found myself getting very good results from it. The interface, I think, is pretty straightforward and pretty simple. Like all of them, you have to get adjusted to the layout initially and kind of figure out where
Absolutely.
Everything is and all the little hidden features. But the interface is
very
simple
clean.
And easy to use, and it kind of steps you through a logical workflow process. So the controls are very direct. Sometimes I find controls are a little bit indirect and that software does things that I don't want it to do, but with Capture One, it's very simple.
No, I mean, I found for me, my general impression with any of these raw converters, especially because, I mean, like we've been saying, you have to find one product, hopefully, settle on one product that you want to use the majority of the time and learn it and use it well, and you will get great results. We haven't had a tremendous amount of time with any of these products that we're reviewing, so we're probably going to leave things out feature-wise. Mm-hmm. But what I liked about Capture One was that...
And by the way, when we say we haven't had a tremendous time, we've been shooting with each of them for weeks, if not a little bit longer than that.
Right.
But sometimes it can take a year to really learn a raw converter's ins and outs. So that's what we're talking about.
My simple criteria for a piece of software, whether it's a raw converter or otherwise, is how quickly can I be up and running with it out of the box and starting to tap into some of its features and getting the desirable result, desired output in this case. How easy is it for me to find the menus without having to dig into 17 chapters of a manual? And the answer with Capture One, with a few minor nits to pick about some of the initial setup, about designating some folders and the folder structure, was it's very easy to use out of the box. And I could get a conversion quite quickly.
One that looked good.
And it looked good, that's right. And the performance was snappy. It didn't.
It's not sluggish.
It wasn't sluggish. Everything is fine, and part of that is because the main window where you view the image is not the final conversion. It's doing an approximation. It will show you the color and the contrast and the tone curves and things like that. You can look at that blown highlights or shadow areas. But when it comes down to the fine detail, it does not draw that fine detail in the entire image. Instead, it uses there's a separate window called a zoom window that you can use, and that works fine because you can make this window pretty big, zoom in. It starts at 100%, and you can go all the way up to 400%, I think.
Yeah.
So for making fine-tuned adjustments to sharpening settings or noise reduction settings, that's a very useful thing to have. It's handy.
Yeah. Some other things about it, it has very good sharpening routines within it. If you're choosing to do your sharpening in the raw processing
step. Yeah, I found it to be real good.
Yeah, and actually that's what I do most of the time because I don't do a lot of tweaks in Photoshop. I don't do heavy manipulation of my images. It's mostly in the raw converter, and usually what I'll do is, you know, do some sharpening that works for the print sizes I care about.
Right. Didn't
if
used
I have
to
do
way.
Something. No. But if for some reason I'm doing something really different than that, I can always reprocess the file. No big deal. But its sharpening routines are very good. You'll get lots of fine detail in the images. It's particularly nice if you're doing things like landscape stuff.
And I didn't see any sharpening halos or artifacts or anything like that.
It looks very nice.
Other than if I over-sharpened it, sure.
Yeah.
But
looks a lot like the stuff in Raw Shooter that we talked about before. There's some similar staff that's worked on it, so that's probably a reason but similarly successful sharpening.
Right.
Other things, overall image quality is good. Not too much in the way of artifact problems, although we did see a little bit, and you can talk about that later, but not much.
Yeah,
it looked awfully good.
Okay.
I saw some instances where it handled things like sensor blooming and color aberration actually a little bit better than Nikon Capture, which does an excellent job on that. You know, just a few instances, so that's great.
I think the, I thought the image quality was good. I think the noise reduction settings worked okay, although I haven't tried it through a lot of high ISO images yet.
Yeah.
The thing I found with some of these things was that the controls, although they're easy to find and they're logical, they don't offer a tremendous amount of control. And I'll give you an example, the noise reduction slider. The noise reduction algorithm seems to work just fine, but your option is off, low, medium, high. I mean, there's a slider and that's it. There's a black box in there that's doing something. If you're used to the fine control, if you're used to using Noise Ninja or something like that, and you want to sharpen things and interact with the noise reduction, this doesn't have that.
But it does.
But it did a good job.
Yeah, it did a good job, and some very often simplicity is a virtue.
Exactly.
So sometimes not having all those
controls were easy to find, and easy to realize what was going on with them.
Yeah,
I found it also. I should bring up one thing that's kind of important is that this software runs on Windows and Mac.
Yeah.
And the latest version from this, I think, is 3.74 or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah.
From that version on, it supports the Intel Macs natively, is what's called the universal binary. So those of you who would be contemplating maybe a new, let's say you're using one of the new PowerBook, the MacBook Pros, this is going to run natively. So it will perform at top speed.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, just something to keep in mind.
Yeah. It does have the tethered option.
Yep.
If you're in a situation that requires that, that can be handy.
Yeah, I think for a studio
Studio photography, things of that sort.
Yeah, I think the workflow in general in this product is quite nice.
Yeah, it's very easy to make adjustments to one file and then copy them very quickly to a series of other files. Just piece of cake.
Yep.
And you can have it apply all the parameters. Subset of them. You can tweak what that subset is. It's very simple.
Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, I like that. On the con side, and really wasn't much.
It's a very solid product, I think. Especially the LE version at $99. I think
that's a good deal.
I think to justify $500 for the studio, the pro version, you have to be doing a lot of tethered shooting.
Yeah.
Or using the Phase 1 backs. I should point that out. That for those of us, not me, who have a lot of money invested in one of these Phase 1 digital backs, there are some additional raw conversion features, like removal of moiré, for example, that are only enabled if you're using the Phase 1 backs. And that's sort of to be expected. It's, you know, it's the same thing that they have proprietary control over. They know the output of that file better than anyone else, so they can add things into their raw
It does come with a little Photoshop plugin that removes that problem, though, the moiré. So it's a separate thing from the converter, but it does come with that. So that's kind of nice. Other things, you know, one little nit is it's got both a levels type of function as well as a curves function. Mm-hmm. And with the levels function, you can see the histogram right there as you're doing those adjustments. For whatever reason, with the curves function, you cannot. The histogram is gone.
Absent.
I've seen that with other raw converters, too, and I'm not sure why that is. I want to be looking at that as I'm adjusting the curves setting. So it would be nice if it had that. It's a nit.
Right.
You already mentioned the control sometimes being a little bit too generic. That can also be a strength, though.
It makes it very direct and simple. Glass half full, glass half empty on that
one. Yeah, exactly. And last thing on a con, the initial setup, just a little bit tricky, figuring out where it's putting your files and how that works.
Right.
Both of us, I think, kind of plug through that pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, once you figure it out, it's not too bad.
Not a long-term thing. I wouldn't use that as a reason to not use this converter because you'll figure it out
in some programs, you'll have the option to save the file. And in other programs, like InCapture One is one of these other ones, you, quote, process the file. And the process means save. So you don't get a save as dialogue option at all. You get a process option, and then you designate a folder into which the processed files, whether it's a TIFF, a JPEG, or whatever you save it as, is placed into. And until you set up that folder, you can't save a file. So at first, when you first see this, if you don't know that, it can be... Now I've told you all, so now you know how to get around
it. And that's the end of the issue. It's not a problem.
That's right.
In the long term, it'd probably be a nice little...
And it's very useful for if you're doing a batch
change in a future release or something like that. But, you know, just to wrap things up in general, I think we both like this converter very well.
Yeah.
It would be toward the top of my list for sure, especially for situations that where you're working with a lot of images and workflow.
It handled that great.
It really did.
It did.
Very nice converter.
We liked it. So that pretty much brings us to the end of today's episode. I know it seems kind of short, but you know that's how it goes. Last one was kind of long, so we'll average it out this time by ending short, so you don't have to hear us rambling on. Stay tuned 2 more weeks again.
We'll talk about some more raw converters. We'll do a a general session on workflow in an upcoming episode, a little bit more about Flash. We've got a bunch of topics out there.
Yeah.
There's some other longer-term things that we're still trying to do. We've had some requests for some sports photography topics.
Yep.
Quite honestly, we're not experts on that, so we're going to go out and do some playing and learn a little bit.
That's what we
hope. So we can talk to you a little bit about what we found, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.